this quality, this quality of consciousness, of equanimity, in its truest manifestation, it is the stillness of the mind. It's a mind that is not moving in reactivity. And it really points to the heart of the Buddha's teachings when the Buddha speaks about the cause of suffering and the release of suffering. Because when he, in the second noble truth of his Piss teachings, says the cause of our suffering or the cause of our pain is the grasping mind, is the attaching, is that grasping on to that which we think is going to give us that lasting fulfillment, that lasting happiness. And it's a tension, a tightness, a fixing, or every time I talk about it, my hand just, you know, the clenching of the fist. And you can feel it as you start to become sensitive. You can feel that way it manifests in the mind and the body, that when the mind gets tight and kind of frozen or fixed. And that's the, when the Buddha speaks about the cause of our pain, we're speaking very much about that tightness, that grasping, that stress in the mind. And so when we're talking about equanimity, the equanimity is the absence of that. It's when the mind releases its grasping. It releases the fixation. And when it does that, it comes into a place of stillness, into a place of peace. Sometimes the metaphor that's used is it's like a mirror-like lake or water, the mirror-like water, the water that's not ruffled by the wind or by anything at all. It's just a mirror-like lake where everything is reflected perfectly in that still water. And so our consciousness is like that when the mind is still. And so we can see everything clearly. Everything is reflected clearly just as it is in its pristine state. It's pristine clarity with the luminosity and the radiance and the brilliance of that mirror that was reflected back to us in our own consciousness and then gets reflected out into all phenomenon. So this quality, this equanimity is a manifestation of the enlightened mind, but it's also a path of practice for us. Because by having the equanimity or the some sense of the understanding of that stillness of mind, the stillness of being, we are able to look at and begin to investigate and inquire into what is not still, that which actually causes the ripples on the pond or in our consciousness, that which actually gives rise to the shakiness and the unsettledness and the that unsatisfactory nature that we experience so often in our mind. So the path and all, the whole of the path of the Buddhist practice really is this investigation into that which hinders or that which blocks this recognition of freedom or awakening. Realization, the realization of what's possible in our mind, in our consciousness, in our being, which really is this deep peace, you know, this deep inner quietude. And many of us know that, you know, that we know that from our meditations. We know those times where we get very quiet, get very still inside. And there's oftentimes with that, there's a quality of kind of sweetness or happiness, kind of a contentment. It's inherently in the equanimity itself. It's a quality of consciousness that when we are still, when we feel the peace, it is pleasurable. It is satisfying. It is very so peaceful that it feels good. We like it. That's part of being human when we're in contact with our nature in that pristine way. We like it. And so in that liking and in that, that that the pleasure and the joy of that, we want more. We want more of that. And in a way, there's a perfection in that, because then it leads us towards the conditions, the causes and conditions that are actually going to bring that about more. And we begin to actually make different choices in our lives. We start to shift the conditions in our lives so that more and more we're in situations that are actually giving support to our to the possibility that we can feel more at ease and we can feel more at peace. So choosing times to meditate, or taking time to go into nature, or being with Dharma friends where we're having conversations, or choosing livelihood, or choosing situations that really do bring about, that support this deepening more and more. And this in itself is a reflection of the Eightfold Noble Path, of the Eightfold Path that the Buddha lays out, where we actually can look and see in all the different areas how we're doing with our livelihood and with our ethics and with our speech and with our meditation and our concentration practices. And, you know, all this is a way that we can really reflect on and make some changes in our lives, so that more and more we're supported into this depth. We're supported to go into this stillness that we know is possible. And it's not, and this equanimity is not, it's not polarized with activity or engagement or involvement in our life. We're not talking about a place, a way that we become so still that we're not moving anymore, or we're not engaging anymore, or we're not talking anymore. We're just in deep states of concentration and meditation. It's not that kind of equanimity, but it's a kind of equanimity that is actually the, in a way, the foundation of our being, of who we are, so that when we do move in our life and we interact in our life, we're moving from that place of stillness and clarity. We're actually engaged in ways that reflect that aspect of our consciousness, and what comes forth with that are all the other qualities of our being. Our wisdom and our love and our compassion and our joy, they're all there in our nature, in our Buddha, we say Buddha nature, or our essential nature, the nature of who we are. All of those qualities are inherent in that nature, that essential nature. So when we rest, when we touch into this place of stillness, of inner stillness, we bring forth these other qualities into the action, into our relationships, into our work, into our ways of being. This is, in a way, it's the carrier of the wisdom. It's the carrier of the wisdom into the world. So then we see, how are we responding? How are we relating to the conditions in our life that we come into contact with? And this is, in a way, our path of practice. I want to give you a personal example of, you know, we all have situations in our lives that are difficult. Everyone has situations in their lives, whether it's conditions within our own physical situation, our health, or our emotional well-being, or whether it's in our families or in our work, our relationships, whether we're engaged in social or political activities in the world. I mean, everywhere we turn, it's difficult. This is the way of the world. There's no way out of this. This is the first noble truth of the Buddha, that there is pain in this life. There is suffering in this life. There is dissatisfaction in this life. There's no way out of those conditions in a very, very practical way, in a very conventional way. But there is a way out in terms of our own relationship to those conditions. There is a way out so that we don't have to be in a state of contracted suffering and distress and pain in relationship to those conditions. So, for example, I mean, many of us in this room may have situations with elder parents. As we get older, is something we encounter as our parents start to age, and more and more we are engaged or maybe even in some ways responsible for their care. And in my situation, my mother is 85, and she's actually in pretty good health. Physically, she's doing very well. She's very has a lot of energy. She's very physically well. She's quite engaged in her life. She's in a relationship with a partner who's not my father. My father passed away, but in relationship with a man who's going to turn 90 this year, and he has some many physical difficulties, some problems with breathing and coughing and not being able to sleep, many, many different problems. So she's continually worried about him and needing to care for him, obviously, and they have each other to care for, which is very beautiful, and it's a wonderful blessing for me that they have each other to look after each other and care for each other. But because his condition is so kind of uncertain, I'm all the time never quite knowing what's going to happen, and sometimes having to actually call the emergency in the middle of the night because of the breathing or something that's happening. She has a great deal of anxiety that starts to build up. She's very, very fearful, very anxious, and because she hasn't had a lot of training in working with her mind, and she hasn't really been very interested in anything I've had to say to her about it. sometimes I think that she's so anxious she can't actually hear what some of the solutions might be for working with her anxiety. But when I speak with her and her partner, I hear this. I hear a lot of the very strong worry and anxiety and the fear and the getting caught in it, and then some of the arguments that happen between her and her partner, because then he starts to project some of his discomfort and anger onto her, and they get into fights and struggles, and it's a very difficult situation. And so and they live in Florida. I live in California, so I don't have a lot of physical contact, but I'm on the phone a lot with them. And so for me, this becomes my equanimity practice. It's like, so, okay, here's a situation. I would like to be able to help. I would like to be able to actually, I would like to have my mother feel completely at ease and at peace within herself so that she's not suffering. I would like her partner also to be able to open to the conditions that are happening for him without the struggle and the inner conflict and the anger and the pain. And so I can feel my own reaction. I can feel the tendency, the movement of wanting to change the situation, to fix the situation, to kind of get in there, you know, see what I can do, make things different, make her happy, make him happy, make the whole thing go away so that everything is okay. I think that's naturally the heart's response. You in a way, it is also a expression of the compassion, of the love. Of course, the heart moves to want to alleviate the pain. That's a natural response. But what the equanimity allows for when we awaken to the stillness of the consciousness of the being, then the wisdom comes forth that says, first of all, this is the way things are. Coming into a place of acceptance with reality. This is the reality. And this is the first thing that needs to happen is the coming into contact with, in a true way, in an honest way, yes, this is the way it is. My mother is suffering. Her partner is suffering. I live 2,000 miles away. Right now I'm another 2,000 miles away on the other side. This is the situation. What can I do? What can I do? Because the more that I want to actually get in there and try to fix it and change it, I might then be leading with my own anxiety and my own fear and my own suffering. And so then I'm bringing my own lack of equanimity, my own reactivity and my own contraction and my own fear to the situation that's already quite filled with fear and distress and stress, and adding more to it. I don't think that's very helpful. And this is what wisdom says. As we look at these, we look at these situations clearly, wisdom says that's not helpful. The clarity of the coming into contact and seeing things as they are, and looking at my own inner response as well, and seeing what's helpful here. What is the best thing that can happen in the situation so that I'm not actually adding more to the suffering that's already occurring? And I think this is what equanimity practice continually asks us to examine. What are we bringing to the situation? Are we bringing more reaction, more anxiety, more fear, more anger, which is all ego activity? We call this ego or selfing, where the self gets caught. The sense of me, who I take myself to be, get caught in my position. It's really taking a position. This is what's going to be best for this situation, but in, from a place of attachment to a particular outcome. In this case, I want my mother and Bill, his name is Bill, to be happy. And I don't like it, and I'm not going to be happy until that situation is better and they're all happy. And then we're kind of all in this mess in a way. Then we all get into the mess. So each one of us really are responsible for our own mind. Each one of us are responsible for what we actually bring into the situation. So what equanimity practice teaches me is first to see things the way they are, because what interferes with seeing clearly is the reaction. I'm either caught in my reaction, which is anger, judgment, blame, attachment to the situation being different. So that's one side of the reaction, which clearly is going to obscure any kind of clear seeing, because I just see the thing, I see the situation the way I want it to be, so I'm not seeing clearly. The other side of the reaction is the withdrawal, is the shutting off, is the pulling away, it's the removing myself from the contact, just pretending that it's not even going on, forgetting about it, let them deal with it. There's nothing I can do, I'm helpless, it's their karma, you know, that they've got to deal with it, and I've got my own life. And I just kind of ignore it, pretend it's not happening. This withdrawal, or sometimes we can call it indifference, kind of an indifference. And this indifference is what's called in Buddhist teachings, it's called the near enemy to equanimity. And the near enemy means that which disguises itself as the quality. So in this case, disguises itself as equanimity. So if I'm just indifferent, that can feel like equanimity because I'm not caught in reaction, right? I'm not angry, I'm not judging, I'm not trying to fix it, I'm not trying to change it. I'm just indifferent. I'm just here. I'm just present. But it's very tricky, that one. It looks like Buddha mind, you know, because we're just here and peaceful and quiet and still. But I'm not really here. I'm not really engaged. I'm not really in contact. In fact, I'm kind of forgetting to call. I'm not even really that interested anymore in what's going on. I'm just kind of shut down. And it's a very tricky place, particularly for meditators, because we can kind of easily go into this place that can kind of feel good, and be somewhat disconnected from the way things are and from reality. And we're just kind of in our own zone in a way, our own kind of concentration, meditation, but we're not really connected. And so this is called the near enemy. It's actually, one of the hindrances to true equanimity. Because true equanimity is engaged. True equanimity is in contact with, we stay in contact with the way things are. Now, it might not be that I'm in contact with, in my mind or in reality, with the situation with my mother all the time, but yet there's a way that these things do sit with us, don't they? You know, it's a way that they're when we have family members or people close to us who are in some pain or distress, or we have children or loved ones, it doesn't go very far away. You know, it stays here with us. It kind of stays in the consciousness in a way. And so the question is, what do we do with that? How are we with that? Because we can fall into states of reactivity, which is a usual state of wanting to fix, this fixing mentality, wanting to fix things, to rescue, take responsibility. The way we take responsibility. And it's such a fine line. Because real responsibility, or what the word means, responsibility, and probably you've heard that word teased apart, responsibility means the ability to respond in a way that's clear, with a quality of love and a wisdom, the ability to respond, rather than the usual way we're responding is often from this place of the self, what I want and what I expect and what I demand, and my own way I want to manipulate the situation or cut off. Those two sides of the reaction. So in exploring the equanimity, we want to understand and know how our mind does that. Knowing how the mind does that and when the mind does that. So in our meditations today, perhaps you've seen ways that you've wanted to change what was going on. You didn't like it. You didn't like the way your mind was, your body was. You didn't like your meditation, or you liked it so much that you wanted to keep it or hold on to it. You didn't want it to change. And how we can get in there and start to manipulate, rather than start with the allowing and the accepting of the way things are. The first step with the equanimity practice is this coming into contact with things as they are, and this allowing, this opening, this accepting. And you hear this, you know, we hear this very in the beginning of our meditation practice, but it's the key piece that just keeps circling around. The first step is the acceptance. It's not the last step, but it's the first step. We always need to come into a place of accepting, which is equanimity in itself. Equanimity is a radical acceptance. It's a radical acceptance because then we're not in reaction to the way things are. So we start with the radical acceptance, and then there is through some knowledge and experience, then we begin to see that in that acceptance, when we are present and when we are awake, there can come forth the appropriate response. It's a natural kind of intelligence or wisdom that comes forth when we are still, when we are not reacting, because we can see things clearly and then we can respond. So when we talk about acceptance, it doesn't mean that, and if Buddhists get accused of this, it doesn't necessarily mean that we become passive and inactive. And that's what a lot of people think about Buddhists, is that if they're very self-centered and they're not very engaged and they're only concerned about about themselves, and they don't really take care in the world with things that need to be taken care of. But yet, in the true understanding, and we have models for this in our world, is that from that place of clarity and connection springs forth the compassionate action, springs forth the wise action in the situation. So for me, with my mother and her partner, it really requires this kind of deep listening, both to her and to myself, in a deep presence, in a clear state of presence, and not withdrawing, and not reacting, not trying. I can sometimes feel how I want to tell her what she should do, or how she should be, or you know, relax, Mom. You know, you don't need to be so anxious, right? How far does that go when you say that to somebody? You don't need to be so anxious. Relax. You know, it's not helpful. It's not helpful. And this eagerness comes through, this kind of sense of urgency comes through to want to change her. But that's not the appropriate response for the situation. So mostly all I can do until I'm actually going to see her in 3 weeks. She's going to come to a wedding, a family wedding. And all I can do is just listen. And express a great deal of kindness and care, concern. Listen to her. Because she's not asking for help. She's not asking me for help. She mostly just needs to keep saying what's happening, telling me what's happening and express her distress. And so all I can do is really listen and let her know that I really care and I'm really concerned. And keep calling. The more that I call, the better it is, and she knows that I really am connected. So we find ways in different situations that we can help, but without adding. This is the key piece. And I think it's important for people who are engaged in work that is often distressing. You know, a lot of activist kind of social activist work or political work or work with people who are challenging to be with or all these different family dynamics, very difficult. I mean, what are we bringing? This is my responsibility. What am I adding? Am I adding more distress, or am I in contraction, or am I adding more relaxation and openness, ease, connection? And this is the very thing that I'm encouraging you to examine in your meditations today. Because you can see this happening in relationship to your own experience. It's not like you need a challenging experience to examine this with. You can see it within your own mind. You can see it within your own body. How are you relating to what's happening, and what are you bringing to it? Are you bringing more? Are you rejecting your experience? Are you wanting to manipulate your experience? Or are you able to open to it and allow it to be as it is and bring, bring a quality of kindness, bring a quality of ease, of spaciousness to what you see. So I think this is why I really like this particular emphasis on the meditation right now, because I see how it goes right to the heart of the second noble truth, the cause of our suffering. We can see right in the moment how we're grasping, how we're holding, how the self, the ego activity arises right in relationship to our experience. We can see it right there. And with the awareness and the mindfulness, we can begin to bring that discrimination. Awareness brings with it a discriminating awareness. Discrimination, where we can start to say, oh yeah, that's the reaction. Oh yeah, this is the openness. And then we investigate it and we inquire into it. We get a feeling for it and we sense it. And then we also see that it's possible to choose it. We can choose relaxation. We can choose the letting go. We can choose that opening into the spaciousness of mind. And it's important to understand, too, that when we speak of equanimity, it's not black and white. And I think sometimes the mind might set it up like this. Either you're completely equanimous or you're not. Right? So you're completely still and unreactive, or you're not. You're in your ordinary kind of difficult mind state. Mm-hmm. With the equanimity practice, it's helpful to see that at any moment it's possible to take one step out of the reaction. You don't have to take the full step out of the reaction, meaning if there's anxiety or fear or anger, it's taking one step back, which says, I'm not going to add more reactivity to this. I'm not going to add more judgment to this. I might be feeling quite anxious right now, and I don't want to be feeling anxious. I would like to be feeling more calm, but I'm not. That's the first, the acceptance, the allowing, seeing things clearly. And then the choice not to add more anxiety about the fact that I'm feeling anxious. Not adding more judgment to myself because I'm not manifesting the way I would like to manifest. That choice, right in that moment, that intention and that clear seeing, not to add more ego activity, more selfing, more grasping, is already a step into equanimity. You're already moving into equanimity. And so we could say that you are being equanimous in relationship to your reaction. You're being equanimous in relationship to your anger, to your anxiety, to your fear, to your judgment. You see? It's already a step out. And that's our practice. And each time we take a step out, we don't add that extra layer, that extra piece, we're already moving towards and strengthening the expression of enlightenment, of awakening, of realization. That is the realization. That is the wisdom. That is the compassion. It's already right there. It's already manifesting. And each time I take that step, I'm strengthening it. It's not even that I am strengthening it. It is getting strengthened. Because that's more and more our reality. Our reality is kindness. Our reality is openness. Our reality is the intention for change and transformation. This is what becomes more and more what we experience when we make that choice. However, we cannot make that choice unless we are aware, unless we see it, unless we bring some consciousness to the patterns of our mind and our heart. So that's why it goes back to the foundation practice of mindfulness. Without mindfulness, without some awareness, I don't think there's much chance for change, for transformation. So this is our practice. This is how our practice works. So we all have these situations. And when we do the equanimity meditation, we're going to work with situations in our life, bring situations, real situations in, and use the particular phrases that we can repeat to write in relationship to the situation that can help bring about that shift in our consciousness so that we're not caught so much in our reactions, but we're actually more responding from a place of wisdom and love. When we speak of equanimity, it's not separate from love. It's not separate from wisdom. That is what's manifesting through equanimity, because we're not in reaction. And when we're not in reaction, we're in love. That is what love is. Love is this radical acceptance and openness to what is, and the staying in contact with that, because we are in love. Why would we withdraw? Why would we cut off? Why would we separate from something that we love? That they don't go together. When we love, we come into contact with, we come into union with. There is no separation. There is no cutting off. So when we speak about stillness of mind, equanimity of mind, that is the expression of love. It is the expression of compassion. It's the expression of wisdom. This is where these qualities manifest and arise from. So I'd like to stop there and kind of open it up, open this conversation up.